What if I tell you that having a baby could be easy? How can you have your beautiful, positive, unmedicated, and natural birth so that you can step into your conscious motherhood? Hello, my name is Bibi. I am a midwife, a birth coach, and I am an early motherhood coach. And I'm here to show you how birth can be easy. You know why? You're never going to forget that day, and you want it to be the best day of your life. Tune in while we'll dive in on how you can have your positive birth and you can have a positive motherhood. Happy listening. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this podcast, Your Holistic Midwife. My name is Bibi and I am your favorite midwife. And today I am joined by one of my favorite midwife, Melanie. Welcome, Melanie, to the show.
Oh, hello, beautiful Bibi.
Thank you so much for coming. Do you just want to introduce yourself a little bit for our listeners?
Sure. So my name's Melanie Jackson. Some people might know me on Instagram as Melanie the Midwife. Some people know me as Dr. Melanie Jackson because I have a PhD in midwifery, which is about birthing outside the system, was my thesis. And so that allows me to work closely in the academic space, and I suppose that's where I have my research skills and knowledge. And I'm one of the hosts of the Great Birth Rebellion podcast. And I met Bibi through the midwifery mentorship that I run, which is for midwives who want to move from working in hospitals in their own private practice businesses. So that mentorship is in its fourth year, and there's been about 150 midwives, Australian midwives, through that program. What else? I'm a mom. I have two children. Charlie is 11 and Frida is nearly 7, and we live here in the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, and we homeschool our children, and we have a 5-acre hobby farm, which we have goats and chickens. And every morning, think of me at about 6:30 in the morning getting out of bed, the first thing I do is milk 3 goats. That's it. And I guess the other thing I do is I'm a private midwife. So I have been a private midwife for 15 years, and that's mostly attending women who are planning on giving birth at home. I think that's all I'm doing at the moment. And running the Convergence of Rebellious Midwives Conference in August. That's a new thing this year as well.
Yeah. Lots of things. That is so amazing. So yeah, I actually met you when I was still working in the system, and I was like, okay, this is definitely not for me. I need something different and better. I did your mentorship a couple of years ago, and I'm finally starting as well my private practice. So it has been a journey. And I think your podcast has been amazing for a lot of women and for a lot of health professionals as well. And I thought to myself, why don't you bring it to the podcast, but give another perspective of you, which is your birth stories?
Yes, I have two very unique and different birth stories. Do you want me to just get started?
Yes, walk us through, like just start from the beginning, because you said one is 11 years old. I didn't realize it was already 11. Oh my God.
I know, 11. I didn't realize he was 11 either. I mean, he is. He's taller than me now. I'm 5 foot, and he's a little bit taller than me now. He's been watching himself get taller and taller, and finally we have agreed that he's taller than me. I'll start from the beginning. So, I mean, I've been a midwife for 15 years. So my whole career, I've been a home birth midwife. So that's where my mentality was at. When I became pregnant, it was easy decision as to what I was going to do about care provider. And I think that's the first choice that women have to make is, okay, I'm pregnant. What now? And so, you know, we unfortunately still have to go off to our GP. That's how the maternity care system works. And the GP usually doesn't know much about birthing options, and they will give you a referral to your local hospital or a local obstetrician. very few of them actually will offer you the opportunity to have midwifery continuity of care. But I knew differently. I was like, right, I know what I need to do. Off I go to the GP to get a referral to my private midwife. And so that was the plan right from the beginning. And women who are planning home births will often come up with against, well-meaning friends and family members wondering if this is a safe and appropriate birth option. And even though I was a home birth midwife and I'd been a home birth midwife for nearly 5 years before I had my baby, my family was wondering, you know, really, is this a good idea? Do you think, you know, you should do this? And I just thought, you know, I'm not a home birth midwife because it makes me lots of money or, you know, for any other reason. I actually genuinely believe that home birth is a very safe and appropriate option for most women, me included. So yes, I absolutely stand by this decision to have a home birth. So I was 28. I was still in the middle of my PhD and got pregnant. And it was great. I was quite happy for that. And then through my pregnancy, experienced a few complications. I had some early bleeding. So about 3 episodes of bleeding from about 8 weeks. I think there was another one at 12 weeks and another one at 16 weeks. And so I didn't really know what this meant. I thought that's it. This is the end of my pregnancy. And then because I was researching and I had access to lots of information and lots of midwives and also my own midwifery colleagues and my own midwife, I did some reading and found out that if the baby's got a heartbeat when you're bleeding, then only 5% of those pregnancies will end in actual miscarriage. And I thought, oh, wow, okay, this is good news. But I do want to know where this bleeding is coming from. And so I did have an ultrasound at that time, and they couldn't work out where the bleeding was coming from. It wasn't from the placenta. It wasn't, you know, from the baby. It wasn't inside my uterus. And so I was happy with that answer. I still don't know to this day where it came from because I declined all the rest of the testing options. I just thought, so long as it's not the placenta and the baby actually has a heartbeat, I'm happy with that amount of information. So that was part of my early pregnancy journey where there was uncertainty as to if I was going to keep being pregnant. And then I was very nauseous all the time in my pregnancy, which was, you know, something that I managed, and maybe sometime we'll talk about on the podcast. But fast forward. I had a very strong feeling around 16 weeks that my baby was going to be born early. And I kept saying to him from about 16 weeks, don't come too early because you're going to be born at home. Don't break your waters. Don't break your waters too early. And at that time, we had a client in our group practice who was 16 weeks and her waters broke. And it was at that time that I started saying, don't break your waters. You can't come too early because you're going to be born at home. And so right from the beginning of my pregnancy, I had a strong feeling that he was going to be preterm before 37 weeks, but that he was going to be okay. And I felt like I knew him. I felt very connected to him. I felt like I knew he was a boy before we had any other ultrasounds. I gave him a name that I felt like he matched his personality.
I didn't love it.
Yeah, I didn't give my husband a choice in that. I was like, his name is Charlie. That's it. He's, you know, that's him.
Yeah.
And so then we came to 30, and I told my midwife, I said, I think I want to be early. I want to be ready earlier than usual because I think he's going to come early. And she said, oh, Mel, it's your first baby. They never come early. What, you know, what are you talking about? And I said, no, I really feel like he's going to. My mum had early babies, and it didn't feel foreign to me. And I was an early baby. So the other thing, all the women in my family and all my cousins had very fast births. And so in my head, he was going to be, you know, early preterm, 36 weeker, maybe, and that he was going to come very fast. And that was my expectation. And I had this hilarious dream one night because I had two midwives. For my first, it was Robin Dempsey and Joe Hunter, who lived just down the street from me at that time. And I had this dream that I was in labor, I was in the birth pool, and it was going very, very fast. And my husband had called Joe because she was the closest, and we just thought, oh my gosh, the baby's coming. And it's Joe literally lived, we could walk to each other's houses. It was so close. So in the dream, she shoots up out of bed. She's wearing pajamas, and it's nighttime and it's pouring rain. And she doesn't get dressed. She doesn't put shoes on. She just runs out the front door and down the street in the rain. And she's running towards my house. And in the dream, she'll be okay with me telling this story because I'm pretty sure we told it on one of the Great Birth Rebellion podcasts. But her boobs were just flopping and flapping everywhere. And she's running full speed, which, you know, is not usually something I would imagine Joe doing. And her boobs are going everywhere. And she burst through my front door. And I held the baby up like the Lion King. And I was like, I'm sorry, I've done it. I've done it already. I'm sorry. And I kept apologizing because the baby came so fast. So somewhere in my subconscious, I was also feeling this was going to be a quick birth. So when I was 36 weeks, I was lying. Actually, that night, I had a call from my friend who lived in India. And she said, Mel, my waters are broken. So we were both pregnant. She said, my waters are broken, but I haven't gone into labor. She was planning a home birth, but the services around her, the maternity services around her, weren't reliable like what we could expect here in Australia. She said, I'm a little bit scared because, you know, I'm not planning on going to hospital and I don't want to go to a hospital here in India. And so I said to her, look, I'm going to pray for you. And as I was going to sleep, I was lying there and praying for my friend, praying that she would get contractions and go into labor and that she would be safe. And then in the middle of the night, I woke up with contractions myself at 36 weeks. And I thought, oh, okay, maybe this is just my opportunity to pray for my friend again. And so I prayed for her again. And I thought, okay, that was a good opportunity. And I kind of dozed in and out of sleep. And then at about 6 in the morning, my husband was in the habit of going to the gym, and he said, should I go to the gym still? I said, yeah, go to the gym. I should be fine. It's just early. It might not even last. And then he was halfway through his workout, and I said, oh, actually, I think you should come home. It's starting to get stronger.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, this is the day. So yeah, I was 36. I think I was 36 weeks and 2 days, actually. And I texted or called my midwife and I said, hey, I think I might be going into labor. How do you feel about me doing this at home? Because 36 weeks and 2 days is considered preterm, you know, not full term. I said, I want to do it at home. I don't feel like I need to go to hospital. I feel like he's going to be fine. And she said, well, if you don't want to go, then I will come to your home for this. I said, great, perfect. I said, I don't need you yet, but you know. And then so it actually felt like it was progressing quite quickly, and they were starting to get very close together. And at one point I turned to my husband and I said, I feel like these are really close. But you know, when you're in labor, you have a very vague understanding of time. And I said, I feel like they're just kind of one on top of the other, and they're not isn't much of a break. And he said, yeah, the app says that you're in transition. And I said, what app? What app are you talking about? I don't know. Somewhere along the line, he decided.
That was like an app. That was like 11 years ago. Did they have an app already?
I don't know. We had not even discussed recording contractions or anything. He had taken upon himself to kind of take note of when the contractions were coming. And his app told him, oh, yeah, she's in transition. And I thought, whoa, okay, they must be coming close together. And I thought, you know what, Jo lives down the road, maybe, you know, put in a call and just see what she thinks. So she came, and then she said, oh yeah, I think things are moving on. I think they're really progressing. And so she decided to call the other midwife as well, which, you know, we normally call the second midwife when things are looking like they're progressing on to birth. So I thought, cool, okay, she's called the second midwife. That's a great sign. Anyway, it kind of went on and on and on and didn't really progress. Like, I felt like it wasn't getting stronger. The contractions weren't really convincing that we were progressing towards giving birth.
And at this point, you were like just on like on earth ground, or were you in the pool water?
Yeah, so just on land. So I had planned a water birth. Interestingly, we had just moved into our new house, which was still being built around us. When I was 35 weeks and we moved in, and I'd said to the builder, I'm having my baby in that room, and I just need you to have at least the room and the kitchen and the bathroom finished. So they were habitable, but the gas still hadn't been attached, and we were having cold showers.
Oh my gosh. Was it winter or was it summer?
It was March, but it was the Blue Mountains, so it was very warm. It was, you know, we had the fire going, and we were having we could boil the kettle and we could heat water up on the fireplace. So we were kind of having warm sponge baths, and, you know, it was fine when you are just two young people in love, but it's, you know, it wasn't comfortable. And I had been trying to get this guy out to attach the gas for months and months and months. And, you know, it's a public service. They're like, yeah, you know, we'll get there when we can. We weren't technically supposed to be living in the house, so nobody was really in a rush to get this gas attached. But I was in labor and the gas man arrived. And my husband, and I know, my husband said, oh, the man is here to attach the gas. Should I send him away? I said, no, absolutely not. Do not send him away. You know, let him do his work. So he did whatever he needed to do with the gas. Little did I know that was only like the middle step in actually getting hot water. We still needed a plumber to do the.
Oh my God.
So I had lost like the desire to have the water birth because I knew that we had a hot water situation.
Yeah.
So I thought, look, that's fine. I mean, I'll give birth on land. We had a nice big deep bath, and I had my sister and my friend there with me, who basically, because the house wasn't finished, I needed people to kind of do things to help with that deficit. So they actually, we had an urn and we had a camp stove and we had the fire going so we could boil pots on the fireplace. And we had, I think Jo ended up going to her house and bringing her camp stove, and we were boiling the kettle, and they all managed to fill the bath with this beautiful water. With all
that's
the
amazing.
I know, they were just going back and forth and back and forth. And so once they filled the bath, my friend and my sister said to me, we are going to fill that birth pool. And I said, honestly, don't spend your energy trying to fill up the birth pool. Honestly, if I need to, I'll use the bath. Otherwise, I'm just going to give birth on land. It's fine. And I didn't hear anything more until some hours later, my friend said to me, if you want to use the pool, it's ready for you.
Oh, like, my God.
You know, you guys have managed to, like, heat up this birth pool with just pots and, you know.
Yeah.
So there was a lovely birth pool there. There was the bath that was full of hot water. Had lots of space in the bedroom to move around. It was just not really progressing. My waters didn't break, which I was grateful for. There was no drama. The baby's heart rate was fine. He was beautiful. I felt well supported. I actually remember sitting down at one point, sort of going, this is actually so boring. I am so bored, because it was going on and on and on. And the sun went down, and Robin went to bed, And Joe went home, and my friend and my sister were asleep on the couch, and I was kind of doing laps around the house trying to get my labor going.
So at this point, like, they were like, okay, no, you're not about to have a baby, right? And they didn't do any examination or nothing. They just said, by the looking of you, nah. And so we'll just leave you.
Correct. So the whole thing was just...
Imagine your face. They're like, ah.
I mean, I didn't ask for an internal exam either. I know, you know, at hospital, they're always checking what your dilation is. I didn't know what my dilation was. Yeah. I just thought, well, I'm fine. I'm well. My baby is well. We just have to keep going.
Yeah.
I just thought I just need to stay nourished. I was having some snacks and some water, you know, and I just was doing some laps. I was lying down when I could. And, you know, everyone was kind of falling asleep all over the place.
Yeah.
And I was
How many hours was it roughly now?
So that's the first night. So if I, you know, contractions started, you know, roughly in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
At this point, we're about in the middle of the next night. So around 24 hours-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kept doing that. And then by the morning, I think around 7 a.m. in the morning, I said to Robin, I think maybe it'd be interesting to know where I'm up to. Like, if I was 3 centimeters dilated, you know, and I'm pretty sure I can't remember the exact details, but, you know, we had a chat about, well, what about if we find out that you're not dilated, what do you want to do? And I was sure, I said, I'm not going to hospital. I'm not going there. You know, I can't turn up to hospital after this many hours of labor. I haven't had gestational diabetes screening. I haven't had GBS screening. I like didn't have the things that they would have been expecting me to have. And also he was preterm and labor had gone on for a while. And I thought, I know what's going to happen. They're going to offer me an augmentation with oxytocin and then he's going to be born. And if he's small, they'll send him to the special care nursery. And if he's preterm, they want to do his blood sugars. And I thought, I'm not.
And antibiotics, because below 37, they do antibiotics now on everybody as well. So,
and unknown GBS. Mm. And, so, you know, all of this stuff that I knew would be waiting for me, you know, CTP. And I thought, like, they won't let me have him in the water.
No.
So I was like, yeah. I said, it's a complete. I'm not interested unless there's something convincing where I'm unwell or my baby's unwell. I'm just not convinced that I want to go to hospital. So I think I was just more interested in where I was up to so that we could make a plan. Should I try and have a sleep? Should I keep moving? What should I do something? Like, I could take some herbs or some homeopathy or acupressure or something. So 7 a.m. the next morning, so however long that was, she says to me, you're actually fully dilated. And I thought,
what? So you were fully
dilated.
Who knows since when?
Who knows when this happened? Actually, maybe we had a vaginal exam before that. No, I don't think we did. Anyway, I don't remember the details. I remember saying you're fully dilated and I was sitting on the toilet actually because she did the vaginal exam with me kind of reclining on the toilet. She said, you're fully dilated. I said, that's great. But we'd had a period where I'd actually managed to fall asleep for quite a number of hours overnight. And I discovered later that everyone was searching for me because they couldn't find me. And what had happened is I had been kneeling next to our bed, sort of on my knees having contractions, and my husband was asleep in the bed. And at some point I thought, gosh, I would like a lie down. And I laid down on some pillows on the floor next to the bed and then just fell asleep. And my contractions must have stopped because they said I was asleep for about 3 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thought, good, I needed that. You know, with these long labors, you need hydration, nourishment, and you need sleep. So, but because I fell asleep on the floor, sort of between the wall and the bed, everyone was kind of wondering where Mel was. So there was a period of that. And then When she told me I was fully dilated, I cried. And I didn't, and when I was crying, it occurred to me that I'd never considered the possibility that I wouldn't get to fully dilated. I just trusted that my body was going to have this baby. And she said, "Well, you're fully dilated." And I thought, great, that's like step one in pushing out a baby is being fully dilated. I thought, fantastic, this is great. We're not going to hospital in this circumstance because everyone's fine. I'm fully dilated. I can keep going. The problem was is that I didn't have any contractions anymore.
Oh, so your contraction have stopped by that point.
They did stop. I don't know how, when, at what time they stopped. I could check my notes, I suppose, but I don't recall when they stopped, but there was no contractions. So we were like, okay, that's all right. What do we try? And as home birth midwives, when things stall, we consider, okay, does the woman's body need more energy? Maybe. So I had a big breakfast. I thought, you know what? I'm just going to start this day like I start every day. I went downstairs. I had a big breakfast, had a cup of tea, you know, everything that I would normally do. I think I had a shower, freshened up. I'm like, right, we are ready for a baby today. And still nothing happened. We kept walking. You know, the baby's position was good as far as we could work out. Then it came to the afternoon. I think it was about 2 p.m. in the afternoon. We
So
tried
that was, what is that? 7 hours.
9, 10, 12, 1, 2, yeah, about 7 hours
7 hours later. So you stayed fully for 7 hours.
since the vaginal exam. I'm pretty sure the vaginal exam was around 7. It was in the morning before breakfast because I knew before breakfast that I was fully dilated. And then and this was all me insisting that I'm not going to hospital. And thankfully, my midwives came with me on that journey. I still don't know what their comfort level was. I don't think I've ever spoken
Yeah,
to them.
that's what I'm asking also. I mean, like someone, like imagine 2024, someone fully for 7 hours.
It was a long time. And it's not like I was fully and not and contracting. I was just fully and not contracting. Enough that we could have a number of conversations about, well, what are we going to do? Because Mel's refusing to do anything other than be at home. So we were kind of knocking around ideas. And at about 2 o'clock, we decided to call an acupuncturist and see if they would come to the house. And I basically thought, well, what have I got to lose? You know, nothing's happening here. And we'd been for a walk up and down the street and for an hour, no contractions. Like I was still very uncomfortable because I remember walking up and down the street with heat packs on. And I was just tired, you know, and bothered and bored.
Yeah,
And so,
because by that time you're like on day two, isn't it?
day
Yeah,
two,
on the second day. So
we've
it's been
done.
36 hours.
The first contraction, yes, of kind of, you know, of something happening. And so then we did all this. We tried, and I was walking, and Joe came for the walk. And, you know, I thought we were going to go 20 meters and come back. And she said, no, we're going to keep going. We're going to go up that hill. We're going to, I was complaining the whole time. And I was just so frustrated. And they were just kind of dragging me along on this walk. And yeah, nothing. We got back, and I remember Joe saying to Robin, nothing, not a single contraction. So yeah, acupuncturist thankfully was available. She came to the house and she said, okay, what's happening? I said, you know, and we told her we're fully dilated, but we haven't got any contractions. I didn't feel any pressure. Like I felt like I needed to do a poo, but there was no urge. There was nothing, no inspiration to do anything. And so she said, okay, we'll lie down. And she put these needles sort of over my tailbone and my lower back. And she moved them down and progressively moved them down. And at one point, I felt the baby kind of shift into my pelvis. And I went, whoa! Like there was like a really strong feeling that he was suddenly down lower in my pelvis. And I went, oh, yeah, I felt that. And then she put some other needles in, some in my tummy, some in my feet, some in my hands. And every few minutes she would tweak them, and I started getting contractions. So almost the initial needles that she put in, the contractions started again. And every few minutes she would tweak them, and then I'd get another contraction. So good. Okay, here we got maybe the baby's moving down, contractions are back. Excellent. So good. So I got up moving. I was on the toilet for a bit, really trying to add to whatever she was doing. And it was still not quite going. And then I was sitting on the toilet, and the acupuncturist came in, and she looked at me. I remember she crouched next to me and looked me in the eye. And she said, "I want to put a needle in your perineum." So for people listening, the perineum is the space between your vaginal opening and your anus. So that little patch of skin there, that's your perineum. She said, "I want to put a needle in your perineum." And I remember just
How
looking.
did you feel about that?
Well, I looked at her very blankly, like, what? And then from the doorway of the bathroom, Joe yells out, "Do it, Mel! Do it, Mel!" And I went, well, okay. I mean, what have I got? I don't have any other options here, actually. You are my last option. So laid on the bed, she put a needle, an acupuncture needle in my perineum. Okay, we've done that. It was literally in and out from memory. I don't think it stayed there very long. So still contracting, we ended up getting a birth stool because I was fully dilated and I was getting contractions. And my baby's preterm, 36 weeks, And my midwife said to me, "Mel, we actually need to get this baby out tonight. There's going to be a limit where you're not going to be well anymore and your baby's not going to be well anymore. He's little, he's younger, he's got to come out." And I was like, "I absolutely agree with you. We do need to get this baby out." And I was like, "Well, what do I do? What I mean?" She's like, "You know what? Let's get the birth pool. Let's get the birth stool and let's just push." Like, I didn't have an urge, but at that point, we're thinking, what other options do we have right now?
Yeah, but you were still like your contraction did started a little bit.
Contractions started again. They did. Still not much. He was born at about 6:30 that evening, but the sun had started to go down again. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, because I'd already seen the sun come up the first morning. It went down. I watched the sun come back up, which was really the only way that I could determine what time it was. The sun was coming back up, and then now the sun was going back down again. And I thought, no way am I going to see another sunrise before I have this baby. So I was like, yeah, we probably need to push this kid out. So pushing on the birth stool, in between contractions, I would get up and move around. And then when I had a contraction, I would sit down again, try and bear down to bring the baby out. That's not the usual practice, but honestly, there was three home birth midwives in that space, my two midwives and myself, and we're all sort of going like, what is going on? We've not really ever seen this pattern of labor before. We're a bit confused. We were just working it out as we went. We knew that I was well and the baby was well, so we're like, well, we're just going to try everything. So pushed, pushed and pushed, and we started to see something bulging out, and we're like, yes, great, that's amazing, so good. And then at one push, my waters burst like spectacularly, like Hollywood style, all over the floor. And there was so much fluid and it was just everywhere. And it became pretty clear that the pushing I was doing was pushing the bag of waters out. But then the following contractions after my waters broke, we could not see anything emerging from my vagina. And I remember going, oh, I said, oh, that's very disheartening to know that actually this whole time I've been pushing out the bag of waters. So now my waters are broken. I thought, right, we've got even less time. So I pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. Finally, my baby was born at about 6:30. So the
So how long was the pushing?
I think it was about 2 hours.
Wow.
This
How did you
time,
do that?
oh my gosh, I was just Yeah, you do it. You find the last little bits of strength that you have. You find them and you gather them. And I was determined. I was like, I am not going to hospital. I can't tell them this story. I can't tell them how long it's been. I can't tell them.
You can't tell them anything. Not even that you're pregnant.
I just thought, this is not going to go well. I need to have this baby here. So I was absolutely determined. And so he was born. He was divine. He was in beautiful condition. He came out beautiful and pink, and he screamed, and he went straight to my chest, and he latched at my breast, which is amazing for 36 weekers. That's the thing that they can really struggle with. And we got up onto the bed, and I remembered I was mentally preparing for a preterm baby. So I knew he had to stay very warm. He had to have good feeds frequently, and that I needed to monitor his breathing and his color. And he had to be vigorous, and he had to be angry about me touching him. He had to be a fighter. And I felt reassured that he was all those things, but he was 2.3 kilos. So,
wow.
So in midwife talk, that's, you know, that's a little baby.
That's, yeah, a little.
Little. I mean, I was a little baby. My sister was a little baby. I'm not a big person. I thought, yeah, we have little babies. And I thought, and my midwife said to me, whether or not it was out of duty or whether or not she genuinely believed it, she said, look, I'm obliged to tell you that these babies, you know, would be admitted to the special care nursery at hospital. And that's my
formula, top ups and antibiotics.
And blood sugar testing, and, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, I'm offering you this opportunity if you want to take your baby to special care nursery. And I said, no, thank you. I can.
Oh, you decline.
Yeah. I said, I can look after him. I know how to look after him. I know what to look for. I've got breast milk.
Yeah.
I had bought this kangaroo wrap, this stretchy wrap, and I planned to do kangaroo care with him. And I'd looked at all the research on that because I really was sure that he was going to be born early. And I thought, right, I know that babies actually do better under kangaroo care, close with their mothers, until they're full term. And so we actually kept him in that kangaroo carrier, in the wrap, myself and my husband, 24 hours a day for the next 4 weeks. And he fed so often, and he gained weight in the first week of life, which is, you know, their babies are allowed to lose 10% of their weight in the first week of their lives. But I knew that he shouldn't. I was like, no, he doesn't have any reserves to lose. So he gained 80 grams in the first week. And the second week he gained half a kilo. I was really confident. I was not frightened that he wasn't well. And that it was evidence. He was weeing and pooing, and he was pink and breathing, and he was suckling himself. I had to give one little syringe of expressed breast milk on the first night of his life because I was feeding very frequently and I couldn't kind of get him to feed at that point. And I thought, well, you still need to eat something. So I gave him 1 mil of expressed breast milk. But other than that, he latched to the breast and he was breastfed. So that was little Charlie. And I just was so tapped into my intuition that pregnancy right from the beginning. That I knew who he was. I knew that he was going to be okay. And then when we checked the placenta, so about half an hour.
Yeah, the placenta came out straight after.
Well, no, not really. So I got into the bed and, you know, when you have a physiological placental birth, you have the baby, then there's usually a little bit of a gap with contractions, and then they come back and you push out your placenta. It's kind of like you're still in labor. It's a second birth of the placenta.
Yeah, so basically physiological, you mean without the syntocin or pitocin in the leg. That's what you chose, yeah?
Correct, yes. So in hospital, you would get an injection and they would pull the cord and bring your placenta out for you. But I decided not to do that, which... You know, again, I was probably at risk of a bleed because of the long labor. But you know, these are the decisions that I made. And so I remember about half an hour after he was born, I started to get contractions again, but I was so tired and so over it that I looked at my midwife and I said, oh no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to. I don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to do that. And she looked at the acupuncturist who was still there and said, can you put a needle in? And the acupuncturist said, yeah, I can put a needle in. So she put a needle in. I had a sniff of clary sage, I think. And then I just had a huge contraction and it came out. My placenta came out. And I went, oh, I was so grateful that it didn't take its time because I was done with taking time. Probably if it had taken much longer, I would have just said to my midwife, just get it out, please.
Yeah.
But it came out, thankfully, with the acupuncture point, and it was fairly low effort and low energy from me from that regard. So that was Charlie, not fast at all, and little and just really unusual. But
when and did you check the placenta? Was anything with the placenta?
Oh, yes, so the placenta, that was one part of the story. Yeah. So the midwife checked the placenta, all beautiful, but she said, oh my goodness, I have never felt such tough membranes, such strong membranes. So, you know, for people who know about placentas, there's a part, the placenta attaches to the mother's uterus, and then the baby is sitting in this big sac, which kind of looks like a few layers of glad wrap, right? Full of amniotic fluid. And the whole pregnancy, I'd been saying to Charlie, don't break your waters. You don't break your waters because you've got to be born at home, you know, not too early. And he took that seriously. The babies make their placenta. And she said, the membranes are so tough. And I said, the whole time I was telling him, don't break your waters.
Love it.
Yeah, so the placenta was all normal, except that she really commented on the strength of membranes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was your first birth. That's amazing. Like, I feel like first birth, especially, like, teach even more to midwives, I guess, because then we're like, okay.
I just never seen it before. I'd never seen someone being fully dilated, but then not progressing on to have a baby. And I don't know what that was about because I still can't identify any fears or concerns that I had.
It's probably about you telling to your baby not to be born for their own pregnancy, and he probably took it on board.
He's like, mom said don't come out, so yeah. I'm not.
I'm like, gonna stay here until 37 weeks.
Yes, I know. And I wonder, you know, I wonder if the early bleeds made him more prone to coming early or whatever it was. But he's beautiful and healthy now, and was the whole time. Yeah, that was my first birth.
Yeah, amazing. And then you went on and have a second baby after that.
I absolutely did. So we had Charlie. I was still working as a private midwife. Mm-hmm. Then when he was about 2.5, I still didn't really feel ready to have a second baby yet. And I was still breastfeeding him. And my period had come back, my bleeding cycle had come back when he was about 2 when I night weaned him. But I still kind of thought, oh, I'm not quite ready for a second yet. And then I took a job with the Australian College of Midwives. It was a very, very good opportunity. In the meantime, I had finished my PhD, and it was an opportunity to work towards an acceptable insurance product for home birth midwives. And the Australian College of Midwives had gotten funding, government funding, to create this insurance package, and they wanted a private midwife to work on it with them.
So I took
that contract, and there was a lot of traveling. We were moving around state to state doing a lot of things, and my husband took 6 months off work, and he brought my son with us. We were traveling all together and working on that. And it was during that time that I firstly thought, wow, I'm glad I didn't have another baby yet, because this would have been really hard. But also through that time, I thought, right, when I'm finished this contract, I'd like to have another baby. So finished the contract, and about 4 or 5 months after that, we got pregnant again with the help of the same acupuncturist, because again, my cycle wasn't very regular. It wasn't reliable. And I said to her, I'd like to get pregnant, but I think I'm ovulating too late. And so she worked with me for 1 month with some acupuncture, and we got pregnant with that. And she, at about 5 weeks, when I had my, like 5 weeks after being pregnant, or would have been, you know, the two week wait, I would have been 3 weeks pregnant, but 5 weeks pregnant, you know, that ridiculous.
Yeah. I always say they always rob us of time. So, you know,
I know, right? So I was there for kind of the last acupuncture appointment in that conception plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, acupuncturists, they check your pulse for things, and they're very clever and can work things out. And I said, do you think, I said, I'm pretty sure I'm pregnant. I feel pregnant. She said, yeah, you are pregnant. And I said, and I think it's a girl. She said, it is a girl. I said, I can feel it. She said, I can feel it.
I love it.
I know. And I said, oh, yeah, like how exciting. So it was like a bit earlier before, you know, very soon after I felt my little Frida arrive, and I felt the pregnancy occur, and I felt who she was. And it was so beautiful to see my acupuncturist and for her to say, I can feel her. I can feel her pregnancy. I can feel, yeah, her. And I was like, great, this is amazing. So pregnant, nauseous, very, very nauseous again through that pregnancy. And then it all progressed fairly uncomplicated, just like Charlie's pregnancy, a little bit of thrush here and there, which was very annoying, but otherwise, you know, uncomplicated.
And in the meantime, you were still being private midwife in the area?
Still working as a private midwife. And I remember one night going out to a birth. On the way there, I stopped to vomit, and then went to the birth and basically ate the whole time, because that was the only thing that would make me feel better. And then somebody else went into labor, and so we did that birth there. And then I got in the car and I was driving to the other birth, and I stopped in the side of the road and vomited, and then went to the other birth. And and I did my last birth. I had clients booked up till I was about 38 weeks with her.
Oh my gosh. No. So you didn't think she was going to come early?
Well, I wasn't sure. I thought, look, I've done a 36-weeker before. If this is just how we do it, because my mum had two earlier babies, but she was a smoker. You know, she was pregnant before women were told that smoking is not good in pregnancy. So I wasn't sure if it was because she was a smoker that she had early babies, or this was just how we did it as a family. So I thought, oh, well, if this is just how we do it, then our babies are ready at 36 weeks and they can come out. So I wasn't sure, but I expected that it wouldn't be a very, like a full term pregnancy, at least not all the way to 42 weeks. And so at 36 weeks, I thought, I'll make sure I'm ready with everything in case it's another 36 weeks, a weeker. And when I booked my midwife, so my midwife this time was Emma Fitzpatrick, and Joe was the second again. And she said, oh, look, I'm going on holidays when you're 41 weeks. I'll be going on holidays. And I said, well, that's fine. I said, I'm not going to go to 41 weeks. So don't worry about it. So we're 37 weeks, 38 weeks, 39 weeks. And I said to Emma, I was like, where's this baby? What is going on? And she said, you're just full term, Mel. It's no big deal. Like, you know, chill out, basically. I was like, I know, but I just thought I was going to have a baby now. And I was at a birth with her, because she was my work colleague. And I was at a birth with her, and the woman, I had called Emma to come, but the woman was birthing quite quickly. And so I ended up being at the birth on my own. But when Emma arrived, the woman was in the pool, and I had rested my tummy on the side of the pool, and I was reaching in because the woman had asked me to put my hand on the baby's head to slow it down. Like, she's like, oh, hold the baby, hold the head. So I went, okay. So rested my belly on the side of the pool, and I was reaching in with my hand on her baby's head as it was emerging. And so Emma walks into this scenario and just kind of holds my hips so I wouldn't fall into the pool. And after the birth, she said, I think maybe, Mel, maybe this should be your last birth.
Yeah.
Before you have your baby. So she said, you just let us, the other midwives in our group, you let us do this last one, which was still yet to have her baby. I said, I think I would like that. Thank you. And so that was the last baby. I was 36 weeks pregnant. And yeah, the pregnancy just felt like it went on and on and on. Obviously it didn't, because I was just having a normal gestation when previously I was used to preterm. So the weekend that I went into labor, I was just over it. I was done with having any expectations that the baby was coming. I just was committed to being pregnant forever. And we went to church that morning. Then we went on a big, long bush walk. And then we had lunch at this place. And I remember I saw there was a bowl of chili on the menu. And I said, I'm going to have that. And I ordered the main meal size. And the guy, he was like, do you want entree or main meal size? I said, I want a main meal size. And he said, you know, that's a really big bowl. I don't think you can finish it. And, you know, if someone tells me I can't do it, then I put all my energy into doing it. And I was like, get me the main size chili bowl. Anyway, ate that whole thing, which I knew I would, because I had a very fast metabolism. I always ate a lot anyway. And did that, and I just kind of let go of any thought that the baby was coming.
And so how many weeks were you at this point?
I was 40 weeks and 2 days.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. Well and truly.
A whole month more.
A whole month more. And I could feel it in my body. I felt so heavy. Whereas I hadn't with Charlie, he was so little. And I thought, how big is this kid inside me? I have no idea. And my mum was going to be coming to my birth this time to be with Charlie so that my husband could be with me. And their car broke down that weekend. And they had two cars, but she said, can I come up to you? This was on Sunday after we had done the lunch and the bushwalk. And she said, can I come up and get your car? So I had a work car, which I didn't need anymore because I wasn't going to work. She said, I'll come up and get your work car. And then I'll know that I have a car. When you go into labor, I know I have a car that I can come up to you with. So that's great. So they all came up and I said, let's just order some Thai and stay for dinner. And then you can take the car back to your house. Anyway, we're eating Thai about 6 o'clock at night and I started to feel tightenings. And I didn't say anything to anybody. I just thought, oh, that's nice. Like, that's new. Bit of action. And so we just ate my dinner quite happily. And then at about 7 o'clock, my dad said, oh, I'll head off. He said to my mum, you just come whenever you're ready. And I said to mum, is it okay maybe if you stay a bit longer to put Charlie to bed? I'm starting to feel some tightenings and I don't know what this is going to be, but maybe me and Dan, my husband, can just sort of do a tidy of the house, set up the birth pool, like, you know, in case this thing takes off over
there. Yeah, yeah.
Be ready. And so she said, that's fine. I'll stay and put Charlie to bed. And I was helping her. So we were upstairs and she had taken him to his room and I was kind of explaining where his pajamas were and the books and whatever. And I started holding onto the door frame and making faces and like I had to take a break from talking through one of the tightenings. And I said, you know, oh yeah, his pajamas are there. Hang on, I'll be back in a minute. And I went to the bedroom and had a big contraction. And then I came back and she said, don't worry, I can do this. Just you do whatever you need to do. So went into the bedroom and the contractions were definitely getting stronger. And I was excited because I was like, finally, I'm not going to be pregnant anymore. And I texted my sister at about 8 o'clock that night. And I said, hey, you know, not really sure, that maybe, I think maybe I'm in labor. Mum's here, you know, everything's fine. And Charlie was kind of coming in and out of the room, my firstborn. He sat on the chair at one point, and by then I was on my hands and knees with the strength of the contractions. And it was just wooden floorboards. And he crawled up to me and he said, "Mum, if you stay here, your knees will get sore." And he started trying to stuff towels under my knees. He gathered these towels up and he was...
How old was he at this point? Five? He was
four. 4 years old. Yeah, really sweet. And my husband said, "Oh, come on, Charlie, just wait," you know, because I was having a contraction. And I said, no, let leave him. He's like, I thought to myself, he's so comfortable with his situation. He's not frightened by labor. We had played labor games through the pregnancy where I would make noises and I would ask him, "Can you see the baby coming out?" And, you know, we'd get into positions and kind of just to familiarize him with what he would witness. And that paid off. He was totally chilled out. He sat on the chair for a bit and watched. And then he said, "I think I might just go to bed now." And so he went off to bed and my mum was just laid with him while I was laboring. And we'd spoken to him about, "Do you want us to wake you up for the birth?" And he said, I'm happy to be at the birth. He said, "But if I'm sleeping, don't wake me up. I don't want to be woken up." So I said, "That's fine." I said, "But you will miss the birth then." And he said, "That's fine. It's fine if I miss it. I'm happy to watch it." So we were just happy for him to come and go as he pleased.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely relaxed. So he went, and then pretty quickly it was progressing. At 9:30, I was reluctant to call anybody because of the last labor.
The last labor was so long that you're like, "I'm not going to call anybody if it's not the real thing."
No, I said, "This is what happened last time. Is it really ramped up and really got strong, and then it petered out and went away. So I was like, no, don't ring anybody, don't ring anybody. And luckily my two midwives lived closer to me this time. Joe was still down the road and Emma was not far, like 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I think at one point my husband was like, "No, I'm gonna call somebody because this is intense. Like, this was strong." You know, I was starting to bash down on the side table with my fist at, you know, during the contractions and vocalizing and getting down onto the floor. I asked him to fill up the pool. I was like, "Yeah, I think you should fill up the pool. This is like really like it's feeling like they're on top, one on top of the other." And the midwife came here and she's like, "Yeah, you're definitely in labor." She called the second midwife. So I think they were both there by 9:30. And I got in the pool pretty soon after that because of how strong it was. And I felt like I wanted to be very physical. So I was holding onto my husband's hand really tightly and kind of rocking myself back and forth quite a lot. Like, my arms were going full open and closed and I was going back and forth towards him. And I was beating my head up against our hands, like kind of...
You're beating yourself.
Yeah, like coming towards him and bringing my forehead to how we were holding hands.
Yeah.
And that just felt like something that I wanted to do. But I remember the water in the pool just kind of sloshing around. Yeah. It was like waves, just me kind of moving around. And I made some comments of like, "Whoa, this is way stronger than last time." And, you know, I wasn't getting a break. It felt like I wasn't getting a break through contractions. And I just thought, okay, this is strong. This is strong labor, stronger than what I felt with Charlie. And I looked at the clock and it was about 10 o'clock. And I said to my husband, "I'm going to be back in my bed by 11. Like, that's it. I'm not going to do this the whole night. I can't do this sensation all night. I'm going to be back in my bed by 11. And at some point after that, I felt an urge, like a strong urge to bear down. I felt like a little bit like I was going to vomit too, but it wasn't, nothing came up, but it kind of overcame my body, like a real kind of like deep urge to bear down. So I just went with it. And after that first push, I felt Frida just fill up my vagina, come down, and I sort of put my own finger in my vagina to see kind of what was I feeling. And I could feel only about two knuckles of my finger could get in before.
Yeah, the head was there.
No, the head, yeah. And I kind of waved to my midwife, like, where I could feel the baby. And she said, oh, that's great. That's good. Yep. You know, and I was in the pool. And then the next push, again, I felt her come lower, the next contraction. And again, I sort of had a little feel, and I could feel that now I could get one little knuckle in, and the head's right there. And I thought, great, she is really moving down. This is not going to be the same birth as last time. We're about to have a baby. And so then I felt the amazing physiological urge was so much more satisfying than the pushing that I did with the first birth, which was so just unnatural.
Yeah.
I had no help from my body for the first birth is what
yeah.
It was. And then this time it felt like my body was doing it all and I was just going along for the ride and I had to just surrender to that process. And so she came down and I remember talking to my body and telling all of the muscles in my bottom and my pelvic floor and my labia and everything, just go soft and let the baby out. And I felt like everything just moved out of the way. Like in my body, I could feel down there was just opening up. And it felt incredible, so blissful. And I started laughing, actually quite hysterical laughing. And I remember thinking to myself, ooh, maybe we should not laugh that much. That's a lot.
It could fall out.
Well, I just thought, does this look weird? And then I very quickly went, no, you can do whatever you want. This is your birth and everybody here loves you and is your friend. And so you can behave any way you want, as mad as it looks. So I was uncontrollably laughing like a mad woman, like cackling. And I heard one of the midwives whisper, what is she doing? I think they were like, what is she doing? What's happening here? And I said, I am so elated right now. Like, this is incredible. It felt amazing. It did not feel painful. I remember she came down and I felt myself at full stretch. And I said to myself, you are at full stretch. And then my brain just went, it's not that bad. This is not that bad. Actually, it was probably my favorite part of the whole birth, was feeling the full stretch of my vulva and still laughing. And her head came out and was born. And then in the next contraction, I didn't feel the same strength of contraction or an urge to even push her out. So although I did try and push her out, there was no movement. And at that point I thought, well, that doesn't seem right. The rest of this has gone really quickly and really felt really good. And this doesn't feel good that I've just had another contraction with the baby's head out and I didn't feel her move the rest of her body out. And I just said to, Emma, my midwife, has said, can you get her out? And she said, okay. And so next contraction, I think she may have put her hand in and done something. It didn't feel uncomfortable or anything. I welcomed that at that time. And I pushed and she, whatever she did, and the baby came out in the water.
Yeah. She probably got a little bit maybe of leverage of the baby, maybe.
Something. It didn't feel like a lot. It didn't feel invasive or like there was a lot of time that went into that. It was very quick. And Frida came out and I was just in this bliss bubble. And I didn't realize anything except Joe said, hey, Mel, have a chat to your baby and maybe blow on her a little bit. And I looked down and Frida was just really unresponsive.
But you had a water birth. Was it a water birth?
I had a water birth, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I went, oh yeah, right, there's a baby. And I just kind of breathed on her and rubbed her a little bit. And I think the midwives might have rubbed her a little bit. And she came in very quickly. We didn't have to do anything else. And so she cried and she was great. And we were all in the pool. And a few minutes after that, she was breastfeeding. So I thought, great, you know, unwell baby that's not coping, doesn't attempt to latch onto the breast. So she was so that was, I think she was born about 10:32 or something like that. And I was back in my bed by 11 p.m.
I love it.
And it was done from, you know, 6 o'clock, maybe not knowing really if I was going to have a baby. Still 8 p.m. I texted my sister, not really sure if this was the night. And then at 10:30, there's a baby. And same thing with the placenta. I kind of went back. I went into the bed and it wasn't out yet. And I waited till I had some contractions. And then when the contractions came back, I had a few sniffs of Clary Sage. And again, I think I squatted down by the side of the bed and pushed the placenta out into a bucket. And it was just done. There was no, I didn't tear with Charlie. I didn't tear with Frida. She was about 1.5 kilos heavier than Charlie.
Wow. So what was their weight? 3 kilos point.
3.54 or something.
Wow.
Yeah. So much bigger baby than Charlie. Not big by other people's standards, but, you know, she was 4 weeks older than him and second baby. And yeah, it was just straightforward. I would have done Charlie's labor again if that's what I'd been called to do, but boy did I enjoy Frida's birth.
Yeah.
Much more. And I got out of the pool with her but when the placenta was still in, and I said to my husband, oh my goodness, I can't wait to do that again. And he said, what do you mean again? I was like, you know, for the next baby. And he said, no, there's no more babies. That's it. And I said, excuse me, I still have my placenta inside of me. Can we have this discussion another time?
You know, yeah.
Not the time to be discussing the end of my birthing journey at the moment when my placenta's still inside. So that was just the best. I had the best birth with her and would
yeah.
do that over again for sure.
Yeah, you want to do it again?
I would. I'm not now. I'm nearly 40 and we've decided 2 is a very easy number of children. And yes, my birthing journey is over, but I'm very glad to have had such a bliss.
That birth, yeah.
I wouldn't say it was orgasmic. It was definitely blissful.
Blissful.
Absolutely. And I didn't remember the pain. I remember what I thought, that this is not that bad. But it was quite blissful to feel the full stretch and to push her out using my body's power rather than having to put so much effort in.
Yeah. Yeah, that is so, so good. It's so nice to actually hear 2 different stories, you know, and because also you are a midwife, you know, and in one you had to do kind of the coaching pushing, which is like what we always say, na 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 na. And then in the second you had, you know, like that, just that reflex, that thing that your body is just, it's just opening up and it's just pushing the baby and it's like, you just kind of just have to go with it, you know. You can't even hold it back because it just happens. So, yeah. And you're like wishing, you know, every woman to have that because it's magical.
Yes, and actually to appreciate it at the time, I could do that because of where my mentality was at. But I feel like a lot of women could have this experience, but the speed of it and the sensation maybe elicits fear in women, and so they can't fully enjoy that experience. And also being able to talk to your body in that time to surrender and allow it to do its work, because a lot of women might tighten up their pelvic floor and try and hold the baby in because
yeah.
So yeah, I think being able to mentally let go, not have fear about it, and to allow it to happen opened me up to a lot, an opportunity to have a blissful experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That is so good. Thank you so much for sharing these intimate and beautiful stories. Would you like to add anything else?
Oh, I think that's all. I mean, yeah, just when you let go of fear of birth, you open yourself up to so many more possibilities. And yeah, I think that's just what I learned.
That is so true. That's what I learned also. I think that's the key. When everybody's like, what is the secret, Bibi? What is the secret? And I'm like, let go of fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get to appreciate all the other sensations that labor offers you, and you get to witness how powerful your body is.
Mm.
You know, even now I look at teenagers with these beautiful tight bodies and, you know, that haven't done anything. And I think, man, you know what that body can do? Like, you think you're proud of it now, you should wait and see what it's going to do later, and how it's going to grow babies and push them out and feed them, and how lush and floppy it's going to get, you know. And it's just like a new level of being.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much for coming here. I'll leave down below all your details anyway, if anybody wants to contact you. And thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. Hey, my friend, thank you so much for listening again. I think we are in for something really special in this podcast. Let's start this new movement. Hey, buckle up. There's a lot of new things and awesome things that you're gonna hear from me. And as you know, just do me a favor, please. Just take a screenshot, put it in your stories, and tag me. I promise I will definitely reshare you. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.